After dropping 2 of 3 to the lowly White Sox, the Red Sox are back on the field today, this time in Baltimore, as they kick off an 11-game road swing that will see them take on the Orioles and then the red-hot Mariners at the end of the week. Big news for the Patriots and confusing news if you're a Patriot fan. Julian Edelman, he still got that 4-game suspension due to performance-enhancing drugs, but the NFL says they don't know exactly what he tested positive for. So we'll get into that whole situation and what it means moving forward as we're here on The Huddle. Albert Breer provided some information to that earlier today in the Monday morning quarterback. Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce went on the Dan Patrick Show today and said he thinks he, not Rob Gronkowski, is the best tight end in football. We'll talk about that as well. We'll get into all the drama surrounding LeBron James's hand also. And it just feels weird without the NHL and the NBA. But we're still here. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. We're always streaming, so you can take us anywhere on the 101.3 ESPN app and on your Amazon Echo. And congratulations to local sports teams who won state championships over the weekend in baseball. Division 1, South Burlington won. In Division 2, it was Lake Region. In Division 3, it was Windsor. That was all Saturday at Centennial Field. And congratulations, CBU Boys Lacrosse, a sixth straight state title. That's what I was trying to say, Rich. A sixth straight title. Where The Huddle is next, 101.3 ESPN.
This is The Huddle, powered in part by Reuben James on Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com and by Orange Theory Fitness. Come see why the New York Times and Men's Health rated the best one-hour workout. Your first workout is free. Open in Burlington on Shelburne Road. The Huddle is now on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide, 101.3ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3ESPN, unaccounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Good. You guys must be happy. I got my hot water back at the house,
yes,
so I can shower.
Oh, you smell a lot better.
I do. It's a bouquet of roses.
And you're wearing a different shirt than you wore every day last week.
Wow.
Well, it's Monday, new week.
Yeah, so this one will last you through Thursday, probably?
Yeah, this is the curling shirt from 19-something.
You smell like part polo, part high karate, or whatever they call that. Yeah, there you go.
Or Boone's Farm.
No, what do they call that? Brute? What was it back in the Brute?
Brute by Fabergé.
Yes. That's what everybody used to use back. Right. You don't have no idea what we're talking about, Brady.
Why do I remember that?
Old smells that...
I know Old Spice and Tough Actin, Tenactin. I remember that commercial.
Do people use Old Spice anymore? I know they still make it, though.
I have it.
As long as it's cheap. I'll buy it if it's cheap. Sure.
Old Spice, Right Guard, Axe.
They sell that by the gallon, I think.
Yeah, the deodorant. You mean? Yeah, it's like $1.99. It lasts you about 6 months.
Brady, how was your weekend? You had a big weekend plan with Jess.
Yeah, big weekend. I really want to know on the Town Fair Tire text line who planned birthday weekends for the woman in their lives better, you or me.
So I didn't plan anything.
This will be a real down-to-the-wire finish.
Well, this is going to be a tough vote here.
I'll tell you what we did for Jess's birthday. Yeah. So we started out on Saturday. We went down to Waterbury.
Yes.
And we went over to...
Love Waterbury.
To the Smuggler's Notch Distillery.
Oh.
Did a tasting there.
Ooh.
Then went over to the cider mill and had lunch and got a cider. And then we went over to Lake Champlain Chocolates, sampled that. We went to the Cabot Cheese Factory. And then we came back for the nightcap, and we went out to the Spirit of Ethan Allen cruise, the Sunset cruise.
Wow.
And then we went to the Growler Garage.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. They have to pick you up off the pavement by the end of the day?
I drove some of it.
Oh, okay.
So I drove the early part.
Now, you're talking about the Cabot in Stowe, that one, the Annex?
In Waterbury.
No, the one in, okay, so Waterbury, I guess it's on the way to Stowe. But are you one of those people that goes in there and just... looks around and starts picking at the free cheese and ends up eating about 47 blocks of it.
Yes, and I bought the giant block of hot buffalo wing cheese.
Oh, well, as long as you finalize everything by actually paying money for the product.
Oh, yeah, I did. So
I'm always amazed. I always laugh when I'm in there. I just stand over it and just go through about 90 toothpicks.
The Spirit of Ethan Allen cruise was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What a weekend plan. I wish I would have gone with that.
Yeah, that sounds just like... Go ahead, Arnie. What did you do for your wife?
Actually, I may be able to top that with the present I gave Beth.
You?
Yeah.
Do I dare ask?
I said, you know what? This weekend, you don't have to fool around with me. So there you go. Oh, there you go. Can you beat that? Which is a better present, what I gave Beth or what he just
did? You know what? I think your present is better.
I think I'm right.
Yeah, I do too.
I think I'm right.
We had a great time. Gross. That boat trip was amazing. 2.5 hours around Lake Champlain.
Wow.
They were also having the, I don't know if it was a high school prom. It seems late for prom season, but there was some kind of high school function on level two. So right. We were on level three. Level two was, I don't know if it was a prom or like a senior gathering, like a senior send-off before kids graduate. But it was really interesting to listen in on some of the conversations as these people walked by. Like this is what high school was like for me 10 years ago.
Wow. How great is that?
Well, they do have proms, a lot of them, at the Echo Center. So maybe it was sort of the finish to the prom, and they actually go out on the water.
Well, I feel bad because there, you could tell that all these high school kids were having a lot of fun. And then there was just like the one guy and one girl off in the corner. You could tell they were clearly having an argument.
God,
so it's like,
Here
they are just having their whole time ruined. Like,
I never had a girlfriend in high school.
Go figure.
You almost had Jeannie Buss.
Well, besides that, I never even went out with a girl in high school once.
No, I didn't either.
No, you don't go out with girls in high school. You're too young then. You know what I mean? You just hung around in school. And we all didn't have like cars. And when you had to call a girl back then, you had to call their house and the mother or father answered. That's like, hello? Is Jeannie there? It's Arnold.
Arnold.
Yeah, she's not here. And don't ever call again. She's never coming back.
Arnold.
Yeah, you could text people back then. And
yeah, texting has made rejection a lot easier.
Jeez. Let alone sexting.
Oh, my God. Did you look like Arnold? Did you have, like, curly hair? And I'm just picturing
not
what
curly
you looked
hair.
Like.
No, I had long, like kind of, I had good hair back then.
Wow.
Yeah. I was a good-looking guy.
When did you start losing it?
Just like last week, really. No, just a long time ago. Yeah, long time ago.
So, yeah, we had a great weekend. And then yesterday, we played cornhole also yesterday. That was great getting outside yesterday. I pitched yesterday in the Green Mountain Baseball League.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
I've already heard
the gloating, but it's deserved gloating because he really did overwhelm his opponent.
I threw a complete game one-hit shutout.
Yeah.
A three-inning game?
Seven innings.
Oh, seven innings. Wow.
Seven-inning one-hit shutout.
Wow.
That's not too shabby. He had a perfect game.
Well, what was the one hit? Was it questionable?
Infield single.
Oh, we got to get the score on the phone,
he
man.
He bunted with one out to go.
No, I had a perfect game through 4 1/3.
Wow. Oh, you knew that in your head, though.
Oh, yeah, I knew.
Oh, what? You said, like, did you know you, like, have a perfect game after the first pitch? He's like,
No. I didn't really realize that I had a perfect game until about the fourth inning. Boy. The longest I've ever carried a perfect game is 4 1/3, so I tied my record with that.
Wow.
And then the shortstop made an error. That was the first runner. And then the guy immediately after him hit an infield single. It was in the hole. It's a legitimate hit, but no runs. Complete game shutout. A 2-0 win.
Oh, that was a close game.
Well, the closer, the better for the pitcher with a no-hitter, right?
Yeah, it was good.
Because you stay focused.
And I'll say this. This was the best I have felt in about 2 years. The velocity was touching 77, probably. The curveball was good. The changeup was good. And the head coach of South Burlington was on our opponent, Goyette.
Yep.
And they just won the state championship on Saturday. So I made his weekend a little bit worse by dominating on Sunday.
He may be like that Dennis Quaid movie with a Tampa Bay.
The rookie.
Yeah. You may become that.
I'll be Mr. Morris from pull him out of the teacher from the from the high school.
Pull him out of his radio show to become a major league pitcher for the Mariners. So I hope your shortstop apologized to you after the error for blowing your perfect game.
I would have thrown the baseball at him.
The next guy got a hit.
Yeah,
so
but he might not have.
Yeah, that's he threw you off.
Yeah, he might not have, but that's okay.
Should have thrown your glove at him.
He owes you a lot of beer.
Look, we did just enough to win. Defense played well. There was a phenomenal play in right field by our guy John out there. He made a nice play. There was a ball that was crushed to right field, and I thought it was going to be a double, and he ended up tracking it down in the gap. So tip of the hat to John, and he's a big listener of the show, so if he's listening, thank you.
Nice play.
Wait a minute. There's a little controversy here.
Wow.
Wow. Rich, on the Town Fair Tire text line, Tristan Will said, Brady, did an over 40 league sneak you in or so you could dominate? Did you play in an over 40 league, Brady, or what?
This is the Tristan. 18 and over.
Wow.
Green Mountain Baseball League was playing. We were playing right at Dorset Park in South Burlington next to Cairns Arena. So come watch anytime.
All right.
Well, I will now. You're a happening. So
I just tried to seed my yard today and screwed that up. Or yesterday.
Yes, what?
I botched that.
Your yard? Your yard is a 12 by 10 plot of green.
I know, and I screwed that up. I know
How
I did.
How do you screw up your yard?
I was putting down seed, but I guess no seed was coming out, and I thought it was
your
coming
yard.
Out. And then when I opened up the thing, the seed was still in the thing.
They just douse it with chemicals and call it a yard.
Exactly. I don't have a green thumb. All right, we got a lot to get to. It's a busy Monday. Plenty from over the weekend. Brady, what's coming up?
Well, remember the trivia tomorrow, Burger Bar, 7:30 to 9:30, half-price appetizers out in Colchester, across from Fanny Allen. We've had great attendance there, but we still always have one or two tables in the back for new teams, so come on out. You can always listen on the Amazon Echo, say Enable 101.3 ESPN. The mistake of the day is up for grabs again this week, trying to get that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for what's coming up today, Travis Kelce says he's better than Gronk. We'll debate that. Justify wins the Triple Crown. We'll talk about that. The Red Sox are out of first place.
Yeesh.
We've got Monday Mirages. But first, Julian Edelman suspended for, quote, an unknown substance, and we're not quite exactly sure what that even means, Arnie.
When I heard this, I'm like, it's like Superman and Kryptonite, and, you know, where did you get this? And an unknown substance, something that the NFL can't recognize, something that, like, medical science can't recognize. Boy, is he ahead of the game. To me, it just goes to show you that it's more guilt than anything else, because anything you take in your body is not going to be unrecognizable. It's like, you know, you take aspirin or ibuprofen or anything that. It shows up. Believe me, the only thing that doesn't show up is when you start to mask it, which I think is going on here. He took something and then took something to mask it, which is why they can't find this.
Yeah. But they still found Robinson Cano tested guilty for a masking agent. Now, it was a diuretic.
But they knew it was a diuretic. They've identified.
But still a masking agent, though. Yeah. So not all right. Well, Michaela Vernava of Nesson, she kind of came out with an update that's corroborated with Albert Breer, the Monday morning quarterback.
According to Albert Breer of the MMQB, Edelman's positive test, quote, was triggered by a substance that wasn't immediately recognizable. Breer writes that the test is still being analyzed, reporting, quote, the test did happen during the off season a couple of months ago, which means it's not for any kind of stimulant. The rules have changed now so that off-season use of stimulants falls under the substances of abuse policy rather than the PED policy. Edelman is currently appealing the four-game suspension.
So I thought that was interesting. Remember,
that is kind of interesting.
Remember a rash of Adderall-related suspensions a couple of years ago?
Right.
That is definitely not what this is, because that stimulant is now part of the substance abuse policy, not the PED policy. So it does look like we're talking about steroids or a masking agent rather than something like a stimulant.
No, I was going to say, it makes him feel more guilty, or at least I think it makes him feel more
guilty. How does one get suspended for having an unrecognizable substance in his body? And why has the NFL, if they have no idea what it even is, not at least talked to Edelman before? I mean, I understand that maybe you put him on hold if it were, but how do you just suspend any player for four games based on what?
I'm more into camp with Rich on this one, Arnie. I'm not saying that he's innocent. I did say from the beginning, for a guy who's passed 100-plus tests in his career, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt until it comes out 100% that he's guilty as he goes through the appeal process. But it does seem odd to me that you can be suspended without knowing exactly what's in his body. If they find out and he's guilty, then by all means, four games. But this feels like guilty before innocent, then innocent until proven guilty.
And shouldn't there be some communication between the league and the player?
Well, there has been. He knows that. He knew the suspension was coming months ago.
Okay, but that's what I thought, because they've been talking about it. But the fact that I just don't get how you can suspend somebody and yet have no idea what you're suspending him for.
You're easily being fooled here. When somebody, let's go ahead and take a diuretic for some reason, okay? The diuretic, when people hear that, they go, well, you could be losing weight. That's what a diuretic is. I mean, I would take one, you wouldn't even have a clue. It's over the counter. There's tons of diuretics out there. But we know when an athlete is taking it, it's used to go ahead and hide something, to cover something, okay? That's why you get suspended. It's not so much because of the diuretic, because they know you're using it for something wrong, okay? It's like,
what? But they didn't say, with Robinson Cano, they said He is taking a diuretic, right. And we have reason to believe that he is masking PEDs. They haven't come out and said what PED it was,
right,
but they
right.
said they have reason to believe that. With Julian Edelman, they're not saying he was found with a diuretic in his system. They're right. saying he has an unknown substance.
Right, right, right. And the which would spike the PED, which would spike the original testing months ago.
Wouldn't they say he's tested positive for a diuretic if he was using a diuretic?
No, well, I don't care if it was a diuretic. That wasn't my point, though. My point is that he looks more guilty because it's untraceable, okay? There's nothing that you put in your body, especially when you're an athlete, that you can't figure out what it was that is untraceable. You can't. I don't think you can sit there and go, geez, what did I put in my body months ago that the whole world can't figure out through medical science what I put in my body? What did I put in my body that's different now that I've been putting in my body the last, 30 years?
Right.
He should know that.
I get what you're saying, Arnie, and I think there should be some red flags when that sort of a thing happens, but don't I mean, I just don't think it's time to discipline him right now. I mean, it's just that's the thing. Don't you have to sort of wait to figure out what exactly it is before you hit him with four games?
Yes, Arnie, I'm with you. I take this news to mean that
absolutely.
I think he looks more guilty than I thought he was a week ago.
Yep.
But that said, until you know for 100% exactly what's in his body, I don't think there's a need for the suspension to come down. And the time, we knew, Edelman knew that he was going to be suspended months ago.
Yep.
Why not wait the extra 2 weeks, 3 weeks to announce it when you know you're right rather than risk that you could be wrong? I'm with you. I think he looks more guilty than a week ago, but it also sets a bad precedent that you are guilty until we prove you innocent rather than the other way around.
100%. There's no more 100%. I mean, look what happened to Tom Brady. 100%. Maybe that would even 50%. And he got suspended. You don't have to go ahead. If you're the NFL, right, you don't have to go ahead and be 100% sure. But in this case, I think they are 100% sure. And Edelman's not being forthright and honest. Don't you guys understand that? He's not. You don't just go ahead and test something that is untraceable that you took months ago. And then you say, geez, I have no idea. Did you take something? Was it a drug? Were you in the hospital? Were you in the doctor's office that the doctor said, try this for what you were injured for? It's not like he ate a Twinkie and said, did you have a Twinkie? We can't recognize that. You know, that's not the way this works. Okay. The NFL doesn't suspend players. It's not their first rodeo, people. You understand that that's why a lot of people don't win those suspensions.
But he's being suspended for something that, I mean, we can go around in circles on this for the whole show, because I mean, we can already see 5 minutes in, this is where we're going with this, but I continue to say that you can't come out and suspend somebody. I mean, I'm trying to equate it to some other thing, including radio, but you can't really equate it with anything that we do here. You know, maybe the boss heard through hearsay that you said something and he's very mad at you, and therefore you're suspended for 4 months days or whatever.
Let me give you this analogy. Whatever he took, okay, that's untraceable. Why don't we just have the whole NFL take it then? Is that what we want to start doing now? That the whole NFL is going to start taking something that's untraceable, and then the NFL is going to say, well, I guess we can't do anything about that?
Right, but do you think every NFL, I mean, don't you think there's been untraceable situations that have gone by the wayside with no suspensions even spoken about?
Do I think people have cheated before? Absolutely, they didn't get caught, but that's beside the point, Rich. That's not the point here, Brady.
James in Starksboro says that basically Edelman's being suspended without 100% knowledge of what's in his body because he's a Patriot. And that's something I want to dispel right there. I've seen that a lot on social media today and on our Facebook page at 101.3 ESPN. The people say, oh, here's the League of Goodell out to get the Patriots again. I don't buy into that narrative.
Nope, I don't either.
I don't think the league has an agenda like that, because if the league had an agenda in that way, you know what? The Patriots would be good as they are. The Giants wouldn't be coming off a 3-13 season. The Cowboys wouldn't have missed the playoffs. Oakland wouldn't have missed the playoffs. These marquee franchises wouldn't have missed the playoffs. If the league had an agenda, they'd want what the NBA has, where you have the league's best players and the league's most storied franchises being relevant. The NFL doesn't have that all the time.
But the one thing, and I agree with you, Brady, this is not a Patriots issue to me, but it does, the one thing that does come out of this with the Patriots is, and I saw a lot of it on Twitter and on the comments sections and all the other places. Oh, TB12, this is Alex Guerrero. And I mean, you never would get that equated to that situation if it weren't the Patriots involved.
Now, that's fans who think that because of the Patriots. because of the Patriots' legacy and the Patriots' history of doing things that are questionable by the law or downright illegal.
Well, Brian Richmond said, well, you know he was guilty because he didn't turn over his phone talking about Brady. But that just goes to show you, though, okay? Was Brady even close to being 100%? Were you talking about benefit of the doubt or beyond reasonable doubt? Were you 50% certain on Brady? 60? 70? Because you're never going to get to 100%. Even with Cano, are you 100% sure? I know he dropped the appeal. I'm pretty sure. I'm 95% sure. But you're never going to be 100% sure. And in the Edelman case, you're probably not. But the fact that he's hiding it, okay? He is hiding it because you don't take something over the last 6 months and just say, geez, what the hell did I take? I can't remember. There's nothing I knew taking brand new. That go ahead and spike this test. That's why it bothers me. Go ahead, Brady.
Danny in Colchester says, I'm actually taking Arnie's side in this. If it was something that he knew he took but is, quote, an unknown substance, why so quiet about it? Well, understand this. He said in his Instagram post on Friday, he can't speak about it until the appeals process is over. I understand you would like to get the answers now, as would I, but legally and through the NFLPA, he can't comment on it until the matter is resolved one way or the other.
One answer I would like, how many things can you take that medical science can't figure out what it is?
I mean, I understand that.
What masking substance did he take that science said, we can't figure this out?
I understand.
That's like finding a rare metal and government can't say, what is this metal? What the hell? We can't figure it out.
You don't think his trainers haven't heard from other players?
I'm maybe more interested in where he got it from or who led him down that path, because if Alex Guerrero is going to come out and speak so vehemently and deny that he had any involvement, we have to presume at least and hope that the Patriots doctors themselves didn't do anything wrong. Who else is Edelman working with that's going to steer him down that path? Because he didn't get it through the team doctor. And if he didn't get it through Guerrero, who else is in it? Who else is there?
And you also got to remember when Kobe went through his injuries? Didn't he go over to, what was it, Germany?
Yeah.
And I don't even know. I can't even begin to tell you what procedure they do there that you can't do here because it's not approved by the AMA. So there's stuff you could take over there, stuff you could do over there. Didn't Andrew Luck say he was going to go ahead and do his training, quote unquote? Yeah, because you can't train in the United States. So he was going to do his training over there. You can take stuff over there. I don't know if that's legal or what's going on, or you wait over there, you don't get tested. I don't know to that fact, but there's stuff going on over there that we have no idea. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Travis Kelce on national radio today says he thinks he's better than Gronk. Ugh. What do we make of that?
We'll get to that. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday, a beautiful Monday out there. My goodness. You know how you have, like, when it's, like, snowing, you have snow days for the schools? We should have, when it's beautiful out, we just take the day off.
I hated snow days because my father was the superintendent of schools, and whenever the forecast was for snow, I'd have bodily death threats to me from my friends at school if he didn't cancel school the next day.
Was that weird being the son of the superintendent?
Well, it was good for grades. I mean, I certainly didn't deserve all those C minuses I got.
Wow, look at you. I love that.
But, yeah, it wasn't much fun when snow was in the forecast, let me tell you.
Big Mike at McGillicuddy's, 100% with Arnie. Stop making excuses for guys willing to jeopardize their career. You got pop, be a man, take your punishment. Great job, guys.
Not so much about making an excuse for him. It's just wanting to know exactly what it was and know, in fact, that he is guilty before the suspension comes down.
Are you, if we're going to take this to the legal way, legal ease of what we do in our legal system, they always say if you want to allocute, if you want to tell us the truth and admit to the crime, you'll get a lesser punishment. If we told Julian Edelman, you know what, you want to tell us the truth, right? We'll cut it from 4 to 1 or 4 to 2. None of this, well, I don't know what I did, but I'm just going to pretend I don't know what I did, but I'll just admit to it. None of that BS. You tell us exactly what you took, and we'll reduce it from 4 to 1. Are you up for something like that?
It's like pleading guilty.
No, I'm absolutely not up for
that. Why? We do that in law every day. We have somebody who commits a crime, we say, admit to it. Instead of getting 5 years, we'll give you 2 years or 1 year or something like that.
Because we're still then up to degrees of interpretation of, okay, do I believe 100% of his story? Do I believe 50% of his story? You just said, tell me exactly what you did. Bottom line, if I just say, okay, I cheated, now I get one game?
No, not you cheated. Tell me what masking did you take, or what pills did you take? If you tell me that, I'll cut it from 4 to 1.
I would not be okay with that.
What about the possibility he actually doesn't know?
Well, then
so he gets it cut down to, he has no chance of getting it cut to 1.
But he does know.
See, well, that's your assumption.
No, he does know. He does know. Because, Rich, let me tell you
something. You don't buy something untraceable over the counter.
Right. Let me tell you something. If I said right now, Rich, the police are outside to arrest you for robbing a bank 15 minutes ago, yep, you would be screaming from the rooftop, I didn't do nothing. You'd get yourself an attorney, and you'd sue. You win millions of dollars, okay? He's not screaming. And I know Rafael Palmeiro. I did not. I understand that. But this, he knows he did something wrong. You guys, I don't understand why you can't see that. I don't see. He would be upset a lot more. He'd be getting attorneys. He'd be going to Tom Brady. He did something wrong.
Right, okay. It's like pleading guilty to a lesser. Isn't it? You're pleading down, basically, so you had spend less time in jail. If you're offering
that's what I'm saying.
Right. If you're offering one game, damn right I'd tell him the truth. But,
tell me the truth.
You're not even entertaining the possibility that he has no idea.
That's right, because I'm not. Because I know he did.
Right.
It's like, the jury of 12, they're guilty or innocent, and they're not. There's nothing in between here, my friend. There's no mistrial. Go ahead, Brady. What did Travis Kelce have to say?
Travis Kelce, Chiefs tight end, on with Dan Patrick today on the Dan Patrick Show over on 960 The Zone, and here's how that went.
Best tight end in the NFL is who?
Travis Kelce, myself. I personally take that and try and make that a definitive answer every single year. I know I've been up in questions with Gronk the past couple of years, and that's very deserving for Gronk. Gronk's a hell of a player. But this year, I mean, obviously I'm always trying to one up and take it to the next level.
Is Travis Kelce better than Gronk? Is he the best tight end in football?
You mean right now?
Right now.
Well, you're not going to believe what I'm about to say, but I'd say he's at least right there with Gronk. Absolutely. The stats don't lie.
Give me the stats, Rich. What are the numbers?
What you want last year? Kelce had 83 catches for 1,038 yards and 8 touchdowns. Gronkowski had 69 receptions for 1,084 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Well, if we're just going
for... it's the same thing.
How long has Travis Kelce been in the league, though?
That's the difference. Yeah. If you're talking about career, he's been in the league since 2013. So he's only played 4 years, basically, with the Chiefs, and he's never had any less than 67 catches or 862 yards.
I thought we were going to talk more like lifetime achievement.
No, that's right, right now. Yeah.
Well, then that changes. If we're talking lifetime achievement, that changes the whole
Kermit
discussion.
Well, Kermit and Winooski said Zach Ertz to the Eagles, who's a damn pretty good tight end also. I thought... if we're just going for next year, though, I don't think I would have Gronkowski then is my top two or three tight ends, to be
really?
Honest with you.
You wouldn't put Gronk in the top two or three heading into next year.
Well, my first thing is I'm worried he wouldn't play 16 games.
Okay, it's fair enough. Yeah, he hasn't proven to be able to do that.
And
so,
can you give Travis Kelce more points, bonus points, because he didn't play with the best quarterback of all time, like Tom Brady, and he's playing with Alex Smith.
Yes, and I think that's part of the discussion. I mean, these are why I hate debates like this in terms of who's the best ever, who's the best now, because everybody's in different circumstances. They're playing at different divisions, at different conferences, at different weather, with different quarterbacks, against different defenses. But that said, I understand anyone who wants to say that Gronk is the best tight end ever, the best they've ever seen, and the best right now. I get those people, but Travis Kelce is in the conversation for best tight end right now. Rich, you said he had more targets than Gronk last year. He had more catches. They had the same amount of touchdowns. They're looking at close to the same yards per reception, and he is doing it. Now, last year, they had the emergence of Kareem Hunt. I understand that. And they had the emergence of Tyreek Hill. But remember, there was a year and a half straight where the Chiefs didn't throw a touchdown to a wide receiver. I mean, it was solely the running game and with Spencer Ware and Travis Kelce. So he was more responsible for the offense was more dependent on him than the Patriots were on Gronk.
You said, yes, you'll give bonus points because Gronk played with the best quarterback of all time.
Yes.
Travis Kelce is playing with Alex Smith. You give Kelce more points because it's a harder division, too? Because let's face it, I mean, Gronk has you're playing the Jets, you're playing the Dolphins, and you're playing the Bills.
It wasn't, look, I understand Denver's defense being great.
Real great.
Yeah, and they were Super Bowl great in the time that Kelce's been in the league, but let's not act like Oakland and Kansas City were Oakland and the San Diego / Los Angeles were world beaters on defense over the last few years. We're looking at Denver, and that's it.
Still a better division, though, than the AFC.
Well, it is, but, I mean, I'm not going to go so much in that direction. You know me, Mr. Stat-based everything when it comes to opinions. But my thought on this all right now is that I would actually rather have Travis Kelce on my team because he is not damaged goods. I mean, how can you honestly say Gronk be absolutely sure he's going to play 16 games next year plus playoffs? There's absolutely no way to do that. Kelce, in the 4 years that he has played, has missed one game.
And I believe it was last season.
It was last season. 16, 16, 16, and 15.
But again,
4 years.
We're not going on lifetime achievement here. We're talking about who's better right now. And the numbers bear out that Gronk is great. Kelce could be as great or maybe even greater.
Will had an important question. Rich, do you have Will and St. Albans? What are their yards after catch? I got to assume Gronkowski is like the number one guy for yards after catch in the whole NFL. But maybe I'm wrong because I don't know who. Maybe running backs are the best in yards after catch. Well, that's after the catch out of the backfield.
Yeah, I don't.
Last year, he had 400. Kelce had 439 yards after catch.
Okay.
So I'll get you Gronk in a second.
Is that a lot? I wonder, like, who leads? Is it a running back that would lead the NFL? Because they get if they're catching out of the backfield, or they don't catch enough.
Yeah,
out of the
is Yak yards after catch or yards after contact? I believe it is catch, but is it running back?
Oh, it could be yards after contact.
You're right. I think a running back would be more likely to have an abundant amount of yards because they're catching stuff out of the backfield. You're right.
Last year, Gronk had 363.
So it's Kelce by a lot.
Wow. That's surprising.
And that's why and I know the question isn't, who would you rather have moving forward? That was the part I'm answering about Kelce.
Yes, yards after catch.
It's yards after catch. Okay. So then that pretty much takes out the running backs.
And let's also get right back to the base of what this discussion has started with, and that's that Kelce is asked if he's the best tight end. What is he going to say?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm top five, so don't pay me the most money there.
I think I'm third right now. Dan, thanks.
You know what's amazing is that, and I just watched him play for 2-3 years in Seattle, I think it was three, Jimmy Graham's not even in the conversation for anybody.
Right.
And I agree with that. I'm not saying Jimmy Graham should be in that conversation because he doesn't block well, and he was largely invisible at times last year. And part of that's because of the Seahawks' poor offensive line, not giving Russell Wilson time to throw. But we're looking at a conversation where it's Gronk, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, and Jimmy Graham is nowhere to be found in any conversation between us or the Texans. I just find that interesting.
Matt said Kelce's more like a big slot wide receiver.
Yep.
Yes, and I agree with that too. They're shaped differently, and Kelce will do some different things where he'll split out wide, maybe come from the backfield, and Andy Reid pretty creative with his formations, etc. Things that Gronk doesn't do. Another reason why I don't like these conversations in the first place.
Right, but the one thing I give Gronk over anybody is down in the goal line. You know what I'm saying? And plus, Gronk makes some really difficult catches that I'm shocked. He's got, Gronk's got better hands than a lot of people give him credit for. I don't know about Travis Kelce, but just over the years of watching Gronk, he just picks it off with a defender right there. Tom will put it right there in him. I mean,
no, he and Kelce are in the same conversation. I mean, all you got to do is see what they've done. No question about it. And as I said, moving forward, if Gronk is constant damaged goods, I'll take Kelce.
And don't be surprised. I know, again, he's also more of a big slot receiver, but Evan Ingram in New York, I think, is a star. Evan Ingram in New York is a star.
By the way, how much Gronk bet $69 on Gronkowski?
How about that? Did he finish second? He finished,
but I think he bet him to win and the play. So I'm not sure.
I mean, and he came from the total back. He was in last.
Yes, I saw that. That was actually a good race. I actually enjoyed that. That was funny. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
We'll get into the Red Sox. A disappointing weekend, but they have good news for tonight.
Wow. We'll get to all that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Who's this? Wait. Don't tell me.
Oh.
Money.
Yeah. And your chicks for free.
I can't. Oh, Stevie Wynn, not Stevie Wynn. What is
no.
it? Gosh, I can't think of it.
Oh, come on. Great 70s and 80s.
I know. Who
band.
Is it? Like, tell me.
DS.
No, that's not doing it for me.
Mark Knopfler.
No, give me the
All right, my Dire Straits.
Dire Straits. Ah, jeez. That's so bad. Why did I say Stevie Winward?
Stevie Winward.
What the hell was I thinking about, huh? You remember him or no?
Yeah, of course I do. Traffic.
Jeez,
absolutely.
That's horrible. That's bad on my part. Sorry. All right, Brady, what's Red Sox on a little bit of a losing streak, and hopefully, with Mookie Betts coming back into the lineup, that helps.
Yeah, breaking news. Mookie Betts activated from the disabled list. He's in the lineup tonight as they start their series with the Orioles, so we'll have that for you at 6:20. But the Red Sox are out of first place, losing 2 of 3 to the White Sox, one of the worst teams in baseball. And, Rich, I'll kind of direct this at you from the start. I've been a big proponent of Alex Cora. I think he's done a great job. I think this team has played, obviously, extremely well. But to be – when you're at home and you're about to go on an 11-game road swing that takes you through Seattle, who's playing well, and you're going to see them for 4 games – you know, my pessimistic fandom tells me the Red Sox will go in there and win 3. But bottom line is that the Mariners have the 3rd best record in baseball – You have an 11-game road trip in which you're facing one of the best teams in baseball. You can't lose two of three at home to one of the worst teams in baseball. That's an embarrassing weekend for the Sox.
No, and let's face it. You've got Detroit and Chicago at home. You can go big picture here, too. I think they took two or three on the Tigers, but didn't really look all that good doing it. So they went 3-3 on a road trip. That, I mean, at a homestand, they absolutely should have gone 5-1. I mean, that Friday night game with Chris Sale just pitching his mind out and to just not be able to touch that kid. I mean, have you ever heard of any of the starters for Chicago this weekend?
Yeah, Covey and Lopez and, I can't remember who pitched on Friday, but...
That narrows it down. But, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I looked at that batting order and that pitching staff. I said, how does anybody ever lose to a team like this? But they just... I mean, all you need to know is one stat. 1-for-23 over the weekend with runners in scoring position. They just kept getting guys on base, and nobody could get him in. And part of that is because one-third of the batting order is hitting combined 200. That's a problem.
Don't want to make a big deal of it out of 162, but this is why divisions are lost. You look back and you say, remember when they lost 2 or 3 to this team and 2 of the teams that you should have gone 5-1 or 6-0 against? This is how you go from first place now to, you know, this is something you should maintain the lead, though, if you have a problem on the road. You know, you have a little bit of leeway. There is no leeway now, I think I've got to worry about the Red Sox pop and the bat. I've got to go ahead and make a few changes here to get things going here, but I'm not liking it.
It's not so much the pop in the bat. It's just the overall, as Rich said, being able to sustain rallies and get guys in when they're on base. I mean, the pop in the bat, Mookie Betts was out for 14 games.
Yes.
They went 8-6 without Mookie Betts, which I think if you look at the macro and say, hey, you're without your best player and you go 8-6, that on the whole is pretty good. They hit 19 home runs in those 14 games that he was out. Or in the 13 going into yesterday, but they had 19 home runs in the 13 games he was out going into yesterday. That's pretty good. It's not so much the pop in the bat. It's not being able to drive guys in consistently, which is what they didn't do yet over this week.
No, but you know what? Eventually, Brady, and you know baseball better than everybody here, so you know, well, you know.
Rich is just offended.
Well,
I appreciate it.
I'm sorry. Rich, you'll say this. There's not one team in baseball, and you could probably go through the years of this, where your best average home run hitter, RBI guy is batting leadoff. Unless you're going back to Bobby Bonds days, those days no longer exist. Now, I do know you bat Judge second sometimes. I know the Yankees did that. You want to get him up more, mostly third, though. But enough of that with Mookie Betts bat leadoff. Yeah. He's not, I don't know, I'm not into your buddy from the sports science or
John Brankus.
John Brankus. I bet you if he did a sports science about this, he said the maximum you could use Mookie Betts would not be batting leadoff. I'm sorry. You got to do something about that.
I think the fact that the I mean, this may be a blessing in disguise sort of to solve this problem because Benintendi really hit well at that leadoff spot. He's got 10 stolen bases. He does have some wheels. I mean, he's on pace for about 30
steals.
But
I still wouldn't put him up there either, though.
No, well, that's the thing. Yeah. He's got some power. He didn't last year. Now, all of a sudden, he's got 11 home runs, and he's hit, 7 of them in the last 15, 20 games, whatever. So who do you put up there then if it's not Betts or Benintendi? Are you just simply putting them in the leadoff spots because they're fast?
No, I kind of want to get somebody. I would kind of maybe do a game or two putting Jackie Bradley Jr. up there to see if I can get him going because I can't have him batting 193 and having him down at the bottom of the order is not doing him any good. Just a couple of games to see if I can give him a little push start here, Brady.
Yeah, but what about the fact that Mookie Betts purely isn't comfortable in any spot with the leadoff spot? Yeah.
Therefore, he is the leadoff hitter.
So what about that? I mean, Arnie, look, if I tell you, look, Arnie, you're a really good three-point shooter, but I only want you to shoot twos. You would say to me, Coach, you're not putting me in the best opportunity to be successful. Yeah, I can shoot some twos, but I'm better as a three-point shooter. You're not giving me the best chance to help this team. That's what you're doing to Mookie.
Aren't I giving him a better chance to get hits if I'm going to get him up to bat with runners on? I mean, aren't you going to see better pitches than if you're batting leadoff and nobody's on base? Then they could kind of pitch around you. I know he's hitting phenomenal, but I mean, where is he going to see better pitches? Batting third with runners on first and second or
what not? About the fact that he's going to get 60 to 80 more at-bats in the season by hitting leadoff?
Well, that's true, too. But, I mean, is he going to get more RBIs? Is he?
You're only the leadoff batter once in the course of a game. You lead off guaranteed one time.
But if you look at
then you get the bottom of that order.
Right,
it's
if you
horrible.
Look at the way this is configured, Mookie Betts doesn't come up with men on base very often. I mean, you look at that horrendous bottom of that lineup, and there's never anybody on base for the leadoff hitter on this team.
Is this the way to utilize your maximum efforts in scoring in the batting order? I'll tell you what, Brady, if you just ask baseball experts, give us the batting order for the Red Sox, I bet you a lot of the, even like the Buster Olney's would move around and tinker with the batting order.
So why are we tinkering with Mookie Betts when what you just said, the problem is right there? Jackie Bradley Jr. hitting 193. Rafael Devers hitting 230 with an OPS of under 700, which is horrible.
Swihart, the catchers.
The catchers are horrendous. Mitch Moreland, I issued an apology last week for not believing him, but this is what I was fearful of.
Yeah, Moreland is about to go off the cliff. He's a 250 career hitter who was hitting 320 about a month ago. You knew this was coming, and it is.
And now here's the other question. The Red Sox effectively chose, and I know money's a part of it. I know money is the 98% part of it. The Red Sox effectively chose Blake Swihart over Hanley Ramirez, and they chose him for versatility, which he does have. He can play a lot of positions. But he's 9 for 55, and that's 9 for 55 on the season, and he's 6 for 34 since they chose him over Hanley. Would you rather have Hanley on this team still and maybe deal with the money? That's what I thought all along, that he gave this offense a better chance to be successful than this cast of characters, and Blake Swihart's proven the point.
It wouldn't be bad, but of course you had to do it. So it really wasn't an option here. There was no option. I was saying this before the show. Pick up Adrian Gonzalez. How many RBIs did he have for the Red Sox first time around?
100.
Well, no, that's pretty good.
And he hated
that's
the whole good. Season. He hated being here. They hated him. It was just one of those clubhouse nightmare scenarios.
Come
so I doubt
home.
He'll come back.
Yeah.
But I assume he's also on a pretty good contract. I mean, what's the point of dumping Hanley if you're bringing in Adrian Gonzalez?
Veteran minimum.
Yeah, you're gonna.
No, he signed for 1 year, $545,000.
Okay, that being said, that's not far away. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. But you're gonna get Adrian Gonzalez to come back to the scene of the crime, which is Boston.
And they're
for him.
In first place, and he's played here before.
They're in second place by a half game.
Okay,
but anyway, yes, if he wants to go ring chasing, then maybe.
Of course.
But why? You already got Adam Lind, who you told me was a great move, who's in AAA, who's the exact same player as Mitch Moreland is.
Right.
Now you're going to go give me a third left-handed hitting defensive first baseman?
I'm going to tell you why. Because, like you said, I'm going to get him for the veteran minimum, okay? I'm going to give myself a little bit of insurance. I'm going to give a guy that gave me 100 RBIs and
like
really
10 years ago.
Okay, but there's no risk. What is the risk here of me picking him up? To have a little extra insurance. And if I'm Gonzalez, how many teams are going to be able to use him, step right in, and have as good of a record as the Red Sox where he can make a difference? I don't know how many teams can use his services right away, but I would think that he could, if things went right, it could seem like it'd be a platoon system or something. I could be wrong. I don't know. He could maybe find himself some at-bats here, unless there's some other place he can go.
Talk to me in about a week and a half, 2 weeks on this after Betts has been inserted into the lineup. Because by putting Betts in, now you got Betts and Martinez, Benintendi. You've got three great hitters there. You've got Moreland, who I think, as I said, is about to go off the cliff. Bogarts, I have no idea what he is. There's a lot more power this year, but he's dropped down into the 270s. So you've got one less bad bat in there, and you're replacing it with the league's leading hitter.
Brady, read what Alex in Moncton said. I'm not sure I understand it.
He says, Brady, you just said that he's the guaranteed leadoff batter just one time. So why is it that big a deal to move him back in the lineup?
Okay, that's a good point. Why
he's going to get 60 to 80 more at-bats by being in the leadoff spot. Your whole thing is about, well, no one ever comes up on base when you're the leadoff spot. Well, you can't say that because, yes, he comes up guaranteed one time a game with nobody on base in the leadoff spot.
Right, right.
7, 8, 9 could have all gotten on in front of him, and it wouldn't have mattered. He'd be coming up with guys on base. The problem is not Mookie Betts hitting leadoff. It's that 7, 8, 9 stink.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
And let's face it, too. Another point you brought up a couple of minutes ago, Mookie Betts wants to lead off. Mookie Betts, before he got hurt, was leading in, I think it was 20 categories, all of Major League Baseball. I mean, if Mookie Betts is more comfortable in the one spot, I think he's deserved, based on performance, to be there.
I don't know if you know this. It's not an individual sport. It's called a team sport. So I don't give a damn what he's most comfortable with. What's good for the team. I don't know if you know that.
You will give a damn when he's hitting 240 in the number three slot.
If I'm going to move him down a couple of spots, he's going to bat 240. We got a big problem after that. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour. What happened over the weekend in high school? Rich will tell us that. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Is this salt and pepper?
This is cake.
Oh, that's right.
Damn.
Oh, that's right.
I should say salt and pepper.
Yes.
Sorry, my bad on that.
You didn't even mention the Rush song he played last intro.
No, I did not. I thought for sure this was salt and pepper. All right, what happened over the weekend, Rich? You had a nice, beautiful day of nothing but high school sports.
Yesterday I was tweeting out from it. I realized that as I sat there for the Windsor versus Green Mountain Division III Championship yesterday afternoon, Centennial, I'm sitting there on
Saturday. This is Saturday.
Saturday.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, Saturday. And I'm sitting up there in the top row of the first base side. It was the first time I've ever watched a baseball game at Centennial Field from somewhere other than the press box in 25 years. And I'm just sitting there going, this is fun. I could get used to this.
Any of the games have a dramatic ending or anything like that, Rich?
Well, I mean, the South Burlington-Colchester game was close.
There was a walk-off in one of the games,
I thought. It was sort of a walk-off. Lake Region shut out Lamoille 1-0, and they scored a run in the top of the seventh. That was some serious pitching. Those two teams, those two kids. I thought that game was going to go until midnight and be nothing. It had that feel. But, yeah, great. And Danville won the D4 championship, and Essex won the Division I softball championship, and
CVU with their sixth straight boys lacrosse title.
Unreal. Unreal.
Was there a good crowd out there?
It was basically like the basketball one-day championship Saturday in March at Barry Auditorium, where everybody just, you know, the whole town's population just comes in, game plays, they empty out, they bring in a couple of new town's population, and it was kind of cool. But, I mean, the key was the weather. Nobody seemed to really care as long as the sun was beating
down. No rain delays on that.
Oh, my gosh.
That's for damn sure.
Wow.
You had a good time. I saw all your tweets and your Facebook posts.
Inspired to actually tweet. I'm going to have to get used to the new netting at Centennial. I'm not going to comment because they are my employers, but I'm not a big fan. So.
But don't they have that most ballparks anyway?
Yeah, it's 30 feet high, and it now goes, there's nowhere you can sit in the seating area from first to third where you don't have a net in front of you.
Yeah.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in. You can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. A beautiful Monday. Days like this is why I want to move and like live on South Hero or Grand Isle. So far, though. How far does it take to drive from here?
Oh, stop. The old days when Route 2 looked a lot different than it does now.
Well, how long does it take?
It's a lot easier to get there now.
From here to South Hero, what?
23 minutes, 24 minutes.
And how much further to Grand Isle?
That's another 5?
No, it is not.
Just zip right up Route 2.
I may do that. I want to live on the water.
No, I don't want you living up there. You stay away from my islands.
Yeah, I want to live out there. It's beautiful out there. Days like this, too, you know?
Well, believe me, for all the days like this, you have the 40-mile-an-hour wind off the lake in the middle of January.
He'll get his summer home in Williston.
Can you live there in the winter?
Of course you can. Many, many people do.
I don't know if it's winterized or
not. No, depends. But I don't want you living. You stay away from my islands.
We're right next to you.
No, I can't even think of my parents, I can't tell you how many hundreds of times in the 60s and 70s when we were up there said, boy, we really should buy some real estate around here. I mean, it was like $100 for 3 acres of waterfront property.
And you're just thinking about how much money you could have right now.
Nice. How nice would that be? By the way, I'm getting my dog trained, Stanley, Lord Stanley.
Oh, no.
Intern Logan's dad, who's a police sergeant, 20 years, I think at Burlington, trains like German Shepherd dogs to obviously, you know, be police dogs.
As opposed to German Shepherd pigs.
Yes, exactly. So he's going to come over and train my dog next week. So.
Why? How did you score that?
Well, he advertises as one. I didn't know it was intern Logan's dad. And two, my dog likes to jump up and give kisses. So
No,
I can't have that. That's just too crazy.
So by the way, just to let people know, your wife's birthday has come and gone.
Yeah, so it was Sunday.
And so we haven't heard a word. All we've done is talk about football when the important thing is like your wife's birthday.
No, we went downtown. I forget the name of the restaurant we went to. What's that?
You went to El Cortijo.
Yes, El Cortijo. Oh. You ever heard of that one?
Sure.
It's nice. I like that.
Oh my goodness.
It's so funny.
It must be a newer place.
No, it's not newer.
Okay, I haven't been there.
It's almost on the corner.
Right.
It's nearest to the corner, and it's like...
Railroad car type thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was nice. That's our favorite place.
We went out.
There were some great bands on Friday night down on Church Street. Just like every stop, the bands just get better and better for Jazz Fest.
We went out to Ken's Pizza Pub on Friday and then to the Barchives.
Oh, I'm surprised I didn't see you. I was out there.
Vintage Video Games. This is a bar.
I know that. Yeah, I know that. So, I love that place.
I beat sales guy Jeff and Miss Pac-Man.
Nice.
So that was great.
That's nice.
Actually, regular Pac-Man. Why did Miss Pac-Man get so much more popular than regular Pac-Man?
I didn't know it was more popular.
She was hot.
Miss Pac-Man is far. I'm going to ignore that. Miss Pac-Man is far more popular than regular Pac-Man.
I used to have
the
tabletop version of Miss Pac-Man and the asteroids in my house.
Oh yes,
how cool
asteroids
was that?
Asteroids and Arkanoid.
Asteroids
and all those
was the
games.
Best. Oh, it was the best. Something I'd never seen in any sport, and it happened over the weekend. Brady,
what's that?
A call being overturned without looking at it on replay.
This was great.
Balk play in Houston or in Texas. Embarrassment. Complete embarrassment.
Now, who's it an embarrassment for?
The umpires.
How do you miss that call?
Well, Seth, tell everybody what we're talking about.
So, I don't know. Okay, then. I didn't know we were going to go to this
I didn't know it was disgusting and all. I just thought it was, I just didn't know how you can overturn something or change a call without going to the replay.
The count was 1-2 and yesterday.
Right.
I want to say the bases were loaded.
No, second and third.
Okay, second and third.
Yeah.
Houston's playing the Rangers.
Yep.
So the Rangers closer, it's 7-7 in the ninth inning.
Yes.
And the Rangers closer.
Top of the seventh, yeah.
No, it's the top of the ninth.
It's the top of the ninth because they're the away team. Yes.
So Houston is, Texas is pitching. Got Keona Kella, he throws the pitch. Evan Gattis checks his swing. Nothing happens. They say it was a ball. He didn't go. Whatever. 2-2 count. We're going to go back to play here. A.J. Hinch comes running out of the dugout and complains it should have been a balk. The umpires get together and decide, yeah, it was a balk, as a matter of fact, and we're going to allow the run to score.
Right.
So it's an embarrassment of the fact that, number one, they missed a call because it was a balk.
Clearly.
It was absolutely a balk.
And it was so obvious. Jose Altuve standing on second base with his arms flailing.
Yes, it was absolutely a balk. But you didn't get the call right. Now it doesn't matter that the opposing coach comes out and you can't allow the opposing coach to come and influence your call. You got it wrong.
Why did they look at the replay though? I don't understand that.
Oh, because one guy, the guy whose call it wasn't initially, they're looking for the guy closest to the first, closest to the pitcher's mound to call him. Although any of them can say it's a balk.
That was my question.
Yes.
I mean, it was so obviously a balk. How could all four of them miss it? Is it because one of or two of them aren't allowed to make that call?
No, any of them are allowed to make the call, but they always wait for the home plate umpire or the guy closest to the pitcher's mound.
Okay.
The other thing that was embarrassing is that the count was 1-2 before that pitch was thrown. After they come back and say it's a balk, they had it listed as 2-2. The balk.
Oh, it doesn't count as a pitch.
It shouldn't have counted as a pitch.
Right. So they missed that one, too?
Yeah, so he struck out.
Wow.
In the next,
I forgot about that.
So he struck out on the next pitch, so it didn't end up mattering. But if he had ended up walking when it should have only been three balls, I would have been even more lit.
Wow.
What a joke.
I didn't even know that.
I just couldn't believe they missed the call, and then I couldn't believe they turned it over.
I thought that it was just A.J. Hinch being really smarter than everybody else and coming up with, wait, you can't. This, that, and the other. I didn't know it was obvious. I saw that he quick pitched it, right?
But he didn't even come.
But a lot of pitchers do that, though.
It wasn't even close to a set position for a fraction of a second.
They could have won our mistake of the day, those umpires. Brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Our 101.3 ESPN baseball cap is up for grabs.
All right, let's go ahead and get to the if this is a story. I don't know if it's actually true. And I guess the guy that nailed the Edelman story, you said, was on the local radio.
Well, no, Adam Kirchin, he said this. This goes back, remember Friday, you and I were talking on the phone, Arnie, about these potential big Patriots rumors.
Right.
And the big Patriots rumor was that Gronk was going to be traded by Friday's show. By Friday at 4 o'clock, Gronk was not going to be on the Patriots. So Adam Kirchin he's formerly of the Boston Herald, but now he's a freelancer. He came out and said on Twitter, from multiple sources, here's what I have about the Gronk rumors. Told Belichick wanted to trade him. Offers on the table with both the Titans and 49ers. He and Robert Kraft had a closed-door meeting to discuss. Tom Brady threatened to retire if the deal went through. and Kraft nixed it. So that's what Adam Kirchen said. I did see other people on Twitter that verified that there were some, you know.
The Reddit user is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about totally different stories.
Really? I thought the Reddit user was the one that nailed the Julian Edelman story.
The Reddit user said there was big Patriots news coming.
And he's the one that started this rumor about Gronk, and because he nailed it the first time, people thought, oh my goodness, he must have some inside information. And I thought he was the one that came out with, was the first one to come out to Gronk and that the Brady was going to quit. That's why that was at.
He didn't say anything about Brady. The Reddit user on Pro Football Talk said that he's the one who broke the Edelman thing. He's also said that he had news coming about a multi-year Patriot.
I think it was just a lucky guess on the Julian Edelman thing.
This is easy to throw this one out there because, to me anyway, it all makes sense. I mean, if you look at it, I understand the idea of trading Gronk, but I mean, you know how cold-hearted Belichick can be. He doesn't care who Gronk is. He doesn't care who anybody, but except maybe Brady is. And then I start seeing things like multiple sources, and I go, all right. I mean, it seems so far-fetched to a lot of people, but I can see if you put this all together that could have possibly happened, and especially the part about Kraft nixing it as soon as he heard Brady was out the door.
Well, Adam Kirchen, the reporter, he was on with Kirk and Callahan today on WEI, and he talked about kind of the backlash on his info.
I understand when the story like this comes out that, you know, a lot of people question my credibility. I understand that people aren't going to believe me and stuff like this. But, you know, this was something that was too big to sit on. And, you know, I know what I have. And I've gotten actually confirmation after the fact, in terms of private messages from people. A lot of people have publicly denied stuff that's in the tweet, but I've actually felt a lot better since then because the private things that I've gotten are like, hey man, you got this right.
I don't believe him. I don't believe it for a bunch of different reasons. Let me give you a couple of them. One, we all know that Tom Brady would have gotten mad if Gronk would have been traded. The fact that you're going to tell me that Kraft and Belichick went as far as to get other teams to be interested, and then Brady got a hold of it and said, no, I'm going to nix the deal. Like, they didn't know it was going to get Brady upset, that they wouldn't have gone to Brady before they would have started this. Two, they said that the Titans, Tennessee, and San Francisco were the teams involved. Not one person from Tennessee who covers the teams, not one person from San Francisco, and nobody from Pro Football Talk or any other football entity has had the story about having inside sources that say he was going to go to those two teams. Nobody else is reporting that from Tennessee or San Francisco.
Well, it would make sense, at least as far as those teams being potential trade partners. We know that John Lynch and Bill Belichick have teamed up before. They did the Jimmy Garoppolo deal. You could send Gronk out to the NFC where he's not going to torment you for the rest of his career. And we know, at least with Tennessee, that Mike Vrabel was a longtime Patriots assistant and would have a relationship and a knowledge of Gronk. Those teams at least make sense. Whether you believe it or not, it makes sense.
That seems too nice and neat. That's what I think, and he's putting in his brain, and that's why he came up with those teams. Going, well, they did.
So you think he just flat out lied?
I made it up?
No, I think what he do is, when you hear rumors, you don't need 100% confirmation. Well, how many people have come out with rumors saying this guy's getting traded, this guy's getting traded?
Well, especially with the Patriots.
I think like 75% go by the wayside. So no, I don't think he's making it up. I just think he has the wrong sources out there. Mm. Because, like I said, how many guys have said someone's getting traded, but that never happens?
Well, that's why I thought this was kind of a tricky thing. Because if you look at, number one on this, number two on this, the people that they're involved with, Tennessee, San Francisco, Robert Kraft, the closed-door meeting, all of this stuff I could conceivably see happening pretty much in the order.
What, going behind Brady's back?
I mean, it all just makes too much sense. Going behind his back?
Does that make sense?
But you know that Belichick makes all personnel decisions. And you know then that Belichick is not that Belichick and Brady's relationship is cold. So he's not going to go to Brady when he says, I have the autonomy to make football decisions. So then he takes it to the owner for approval, and then they have to talk about it. And we know Kraft is on Brady's side.
It took one phone call for Brady to nix the deal. So, and they know that. So are they going to go behind Brady's back? And then what happens if Brady didn't find out? Suppose Brady didn't find out. They made the deal.
Right. And well, that's the thing. It would never happen because he has to go through Kraft to make the deal, doesn't he? I'm talking about Belichick here.
What, no, but suppose Tom Brady didn't find out.
Why would Belichick and whomever was involved in this trade ever waste one breath of this knowing that it has to go through the owner who's going to nix it no matter what because of what ended up happening with Brady?
Well, I don't know if he was going to think that they were going to nix it.
Right.
So, really? Yeah. You don't think that Kraft would have nixed that, letting Gronk go, knowing what Brady's reaction would be?
Yeah, but see, Arnie, you're making my point as to why I think this is more believable. I don't know that all of it went down this way, but if we just looked at a pure plausibility standpoint, Belichick has had Kraft's blessing where Kraft says, I let him make the football decisions. So Belichick puts on his GM hat, he makes the calls, he gets a deal, he goes to Kraft for approval. Kraft then loops in Brady because he's on Brady's side, whereas Belichick isn't. Kraft comes in and brings Brady in. How do you feel about this? Brady says, I'm not okay with it. And Kraft says, okay, you're not doing it.
But Robert Kraft is smart enough to go to Brady before you start calling other teams.
But he's not. But okay. Maybe he's not involved in those conversations, okay? Maybe Kraft says, Belichick makes the football decisions.
Right.
You make the decisions and then come to me for the final approval. That's how this goes. Not Belichick says, Belichick doesn't need to say to Kraft first, hey, I'm thinking of making a deal. What do you think first? Maybe some GMs do it that way, but some don't.
I don't. If you're telling me you think that Belichick can trade Gronkowski or cut him before going to Robert Kraft, I would say no way. I'd say no way can he do that on his own. He would have to go to Robert Kraft. I don't think he could wake up and go, oh, by the way, Robert, I just traded Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
I probably should have brought that up first in the meeting. Never in a million years, I don't care how damn good you are, would you be able to make a decision like that without going to the owner.
But wouldn't you know you have to get the owner's approval anyway. So before you float the idea of trading Gronk, he's not going to go up to him and say, hey, look, I'm thinking of trading Gronk, and what's your thoughts on it? Because that answer is always going to be no. But what if he goes to Gronk? What if he goes to him and says, look, I want to trade Gronk. I've got an offer on the table. It's 2 first-round picks. And it's a first-round pick that might be high next year.
Then I'd say you screwed up the Garoppolo trade. That's 1-2. You wasted all this time because the answer is no.
Okay. So maybe
you wasted all this time instead of just coming to me first.
So maybe that's how it went down where Kraft says that. But it is plausible that Belichick says the best way to make this reality is to get the offer on the table.
Yeah, I don't think he would have done that. I think that would have been a big waste of time. Then he would have said, if I was Robert Kraft, I would have felt betrayed that you've gone behind my back, try to get deals for one of my Hall of Famers, and you never even came to me. I'd have a real problem with that.
Well, the step-by-step process of the way this appears to be written out makes sense to me. The thing is it never should have gotten past a certain step, and that's the step of Belichick wanting to trade Gronk, knowing that Kraft will never let it happen. Now, how does Belichick come out of this feeling about things? He can't be very happy.
No, he's not happy, and I don't think Robert Kraft is happy. I don't think Gronkowski's happy.
Or Tom Brady.
I think all four of them are upset.
Absolutely. It's 0-for-4 here as far as happiness. These are the kind of little things that if this is true, and I never know what to think about Patriots rumors because there's 400 of them every single day, but if any of this is true at all, nobody comes out of this in a good mood, and that's not good for the team.
Yeah, I don't think he went as far as gotten teams. Because I like I said earlier, I think if that's true, I would have heard from the radio stations up there saying, okay, here's the latest we got. You know how everybody starts piling on when one person gets the inside scoop? Everybody's all of a sudden gets that scoop too. Oh, yes, we've confirmed that too. Yeah, none of that's been confirmed about San Francisco, about the Titans, about it. Matter of fact, any teams, are those the only two teams he would have contacted too? Don't you think you would have, if you want to trade Rob Gronkowski, you're only going to contact two teams? Don't you think you would have put the whole field out to see what the highest offer is, instead of just maybe contacting two teams? I got to think that's not doing your due diligence if you didn't do that.
What if he was approached first? What if he had no intention of trading Gronk and those two teams call and say, look, we want him. What does it take?
It could be that also, but that's not the way the story made it out to be, because, you know, that's why Tom Brady had to call up and say, I'm going to retire if you trade him. So, no, I don't think he did. If he only went to two teams, he didn't do his due diligence. And if you really want to trade somebody, I don't care if you want to trade a second-string punter. You put it out on the wires. Who's giving me the most, right? You traded Garoppolo? You're going to tell me they only called San Francisco? Or they called everybody that needs a quarterback? Who's paying the most for this?
You would like to think they made a lot of phone calls, but you'd never know it based on what they couldn't return on that deal.
I mean, otherwise, you're not doing your due diligence. Brady, what's coming up next?
Monday Mirages.
Next, right here on... Let's go down to New Jersey. They're starting the sports betting soon. I'm starting to get the itch to do a little sports betting. Let's get that going.
All right, I'll head down there with you.
Let's go down there. Let's
bring my millions.
Yeah. go down to the border, do a little sports betting out there. I'm all for that. Shaden Kirby, what does he write? You don't think that
Shane Kirby, not Shane in Kirby.
Damn, I hate when they put the last.
If he lives in Kirby, he's one of about seven.
Is there a place called Kirby?
Yeah, in the Northeast Kingdom.
Yeah.
It's about...
That's why I got confused.
There's literally 100 people in it.
You said you don't think they reached out to Bill? Knowing Gronk's situation, Bill brings to the table and is shut down. I guess people... your point, Brady, that they called the Patriots because of the situation they knew with Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, I think anything is possible. I think anything is possible in this. I do find it odd that the story is not corroborated by anybody else, the story that Adam Kirchen spins... For us, the guy who was from the Boston Herald, I find that odd. But I do believe it's possible that, one, Belichick wanted to trade Gronk, that, two, he acquired offers for Gronk and took it to Kraft, who then took it to Brady, and then it was nixed from that point. I do believe that that is possible. I'm not saying that it's true, but I believe that chain of events could have happened.
Does that mean the extension's not going very well, or does that mean he just wants Gronk gone, or does he want to spite Brady, or... I wouldn't. No, that's stupid. He wouldn't want to spite Brady. But is this back to I want to get rid of a guy a year or two earlier than a year or two later? I don't even know why he's doing this.
Well, I think Belichick sees himself as a more long-term head coach than maybe we had thought.
That's
we thought
true.
Maybe Could Brady be. And him were going to go out together. That I no longer think is the case. I think Belichick sees himself as the head coach of this franchise. So he sees building for this year, but also for the future. So if he can acquire good future assets for Gronk, I think he's interested in exploring that.
Well, I'm curious to see what's going to how this will play out. All right, let's get to Monday Mirages.
Question one,
right there,
in line with what we were just talking about. Do you believe that Tom Brady is doing his part to quell the Patriots offseason drama? Real or mirage?
No, that's a mirage. He's not doing anything.
Exactly.
He's not doing anything. What the hell is he doing? He's doing his own thing. He's going around with his family, with his wife. He's traveling. Not even going to OTAs. What the hell? No, he's not doing anything. And by the way, has he made any comment about Julian Edelman? I don't understand why he hasn't said anything. No, he's not doing it. It's all about Tom Brady. This is the summer of Tom Brady.
This is the word mirage in the tiniest letters possible. Because I haven't heard that's pretty much what I was going to say. Have we heard anything at all as far as Brady even discussing any of this stuff we throw out?
This is a clean sweep. This is a mirage, and it's a big-time mirage, and maybe things would be better if Brady had come out and spoke. I mean, you heard Gronk say that he loves being in New England. There's no problem with him and Belichick. You've heard Belichick say that things are fine. He's got a good relationship. Robert Kraft has tried to say things are fine. Outside of one kind of clunky media news conference at OTAs, Tom Brady has said nothing the entire offseason. He hasn't spoken about his contract. He hasn't spoken about Giselle. He hasn't spoken about Belichick. He hasn't spoken about Gronk. He hasn't spoken about Edelman. The questions continue to come up in part because Tom Brady isn't squashing them.
He's always been that way, though. I mean, I remember it took how many months of endless debate about things like Deflategate just for him to even come out and say anything about it. I mean, it's not his thing, and he doesn't like getting cornered. The press conferences are set up so that he can't get cornered. When he does, he gives that wry smile and says, I don't have anything to say about that.
Question two, you think the NFL was justified in giving Julian Edelman a suspension despite the substance he tested positive for being unknown? Real or mirage?
Well, they are justified, so I'm going to say real, 100%. That's why you really don't win very many appeals. You said Richard Sherman won his appeal?
Yes, Adderall.
It went from what, 4-0?
4-0. Completely beat it.
Sometimes you get reductions, but that's more like...
You don't get reductions, I don't think, on the PED or
right.
the drug and abuse
policy. I was about
policy.
To say, sometimes you get reductions, but that's more like on assault cases or something like that. But no, they were certainly justified because, one, it was spiked testing. Two, they don't know what he used to cover it up as they've never seen anything like this before in their life. And they've seen everything. So when you're telling me you've never seen this before, he's come up with a way, or not he, but his people have come up with a way to mask this. He is hiding something big time.
I agree with you that there is some suspicion here, but I have a big problem. That's why I'm calling this a mirage. I have a big problem with suspending somebody for something they can't even identify. We don't know what it is you've done, but we're going to suspend you for 4 games anyway. I can't get past that. And it's not all Patriots fan stuff. I just can't get past the logic in that.
I'll give you an analogy. If you're a C student and you took the SAT and scored a perfect 1600, I'm going to say, Rich, you didn't get a 1600. You cheated. I don't know how you did it, but you cheated, and we're going to punish you. That's what I would do to you. I'm sorry. Is that wrong? I don't know.
It's a mirage because until we know exactly what it is, they're testing this substance. I mean, they're running more tests to figure out what exactly he took or whatever was in his system. Until those answers are known, then I don't need the suspension to be out now. Also, it's not incredibly timely. We're 2 months away from preseason games even starting. You have time to figure this out and get it right. This is not like, you know, this is not the most urgent of situations right now. Get this thing right and then suspend them all you want. But I need answers as to what
suppose
it is.
Suppose they
first.
Never identify it.
I don't see that. I don't see that being possible.
Oh, if they don't identify it, then I would just call up Julian Edelman and say, what did you take? I want to take that too. We all want to take that. And don't tell me you don't know what you took, because you took something that's so unidentifiable.
If they never identify it, I mean, can you suspend him?
Yeah, because
don't
be
you have to have some sort of evidence?
No, this is Balk all over again. That's what this is.
Ugh. Question three, Monday Mirage is here on the huddle. Masahiro Tanaka is now on the disabled list also for the Yankees, so the Yankees should go out and acquire a starting pitcher as soon as possible. Real or Mirage?
Real. Of course they should. Why shouldn't they? They've got the money. They're the New York Yankees. They could overstock on players. There's no reason why they shouldn't. And they're having a phenomenal year. It's going to be a big fight all the way maybe to the finish with the Red Sox. Damn right that's the first thing they should do.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost Tanaka, and who knows how long. Buster always calls his arm ready to blow up, and who knows, maybe it just did running the bases, although it wasn't his arm that he hurt. But, I mean, this could be the beginning of that sort of a thing, and that's kind of speculating. But and Montgomery gone, so there's 40% of your starting rotation gone. So you got Gray, and you never know what you're going to get from him. You got Severino, who's just been an absolute bull and probably a Cy Young Award winner. And who am I thinking of, the fifth guy?
Sabathia.
Yes, yeah, CC Sabathia, who for some reason just goes on and on and keeps getting it done. But yeah, that team, absolutely. I look at their record and they go, how is this happening? I mean, did you see that lineup they trotted out last night against the Mets? The whole team, the whole starting lineup, other than the two kids at the bottom of the order, were hitting between 190 and 240. No wonder they got shut out. But I think this is absolutely real. And as a Sox fan, I'm dreading what they might come up with.
I'm going to say lukewarmly that it's a mirage for right now. I don't think the Yankees need to make a move yet. Their farm system is so good that they don't need to go out and overpay right now to go out and get a rental player like Cole Hamels. If you were going to give me Blake Snell like we talked about with 4+ years of team control, then I'd be spinning a different story. But the guys that are available right now are your Cole Hamels rent-a-players. I'm not interested in that. They've got a kid who's a young kid in AAA, Justice Sheffield, who they acquired at a big deal, I believe, for Andrew Miller a couple years ago when they shipped him out to Cleveland. I would rather give him a shot. Now, it's tough to do on-the-job training when you're in the middle of a pennant race like the Yankees are, but if I'd rather bring up that kid first before I go to the trade market.
I just get nervous about what happens if Domingo Germán, who's now apparently your number four guy, who hasn't been really that good, and Gray, who hasn't been that good, and now who's your number five guy, what if that gets consistently to be a problem? At some point, you got to pull the trigger.
At some point, you do, but I'm still giving it to the kid first.
Have the Dodgers had six starting pitchers on the DL now?
They've had a bunch.
I think it's six.
And Bueller's hurt now, too, so.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about bad luck. I've never seen anything like that.
The Mariners used the most pitchers in the history of baseball last year for one season, so don't talk to me about
it. That might be broken by the Dodgers. Okay, Brady, since you brought that, what pitcher has the most appearances in a year?
Mike Marshall.
Yeah, you got it, big boy. Dodgers. He was like 100 and something games.
Wow, good call, Rich.
Look at that.
Can you imagine 100+ appearances in a season? Regular season.
Not to get confused with the Mike Marshall who played first base that went out with Belinda Carlisle from, what was the name of that group?
The Go-Go's.
Our lips are sealed. That song. You know, the Go-Go's. Thank you, Rich. There you go.
Yes. Oh, wow. Two straight trivia things I answered correctly.
You should be good for the burger bar tomorrow, 7:30 to 9:30.
All this useless trivia.
Question four. Speaking of Japanese pitchers, Shohei Ohtani possibly needs Tommy John. In fact, they're calling it likely, and we may not see him again until 2020.
Yeah, the Angels are saying, no, we'll wait and see. 2020.
So Ohtani's injury is a big blow for baseball, real or mirage?
Oh, that's real. There's real. I mean, look, he's so much better than I thought he was going to be, but now how's he going to be when he gets back? It's going to be a year plus of no Ohtani hype. I wonder if we're still going to have the hype and if everybody's going to be excited when he comes back. It's terrible that he had to have this Tommy John surgery. Yeah.
That is real in bold capital letters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the worst. And I never felt like Major League Baseball did enough to hype that kid. I mean, what he was coming over here and doing, I felt like maybe, you know, be careful just because in spring training he's getting absolutely hammered on the mound and he wasn't hitting. He just looked like maybe he was out of place. But once he started doing well at both ends,
it's unprecedented. It's
like, let's get the hype machine going here. This is unbelievable.
Even Babe Ruth didn't do it at the same time.
This is 100% real. This was something unprecedented, as you said. It was a real treat for baseball and a sport that needs to be innovative and needs to attract a younger demographic. What better way to do that than roll out something we've never seen before in this lifetime? And this isn't the huge blow for baseball. It's a huge blow for Ohtani, and you feel bad for Ohtani. By coming over when he did, he sacrificed hundreds of millions of dollars. If he had waited until he was 25, he could have come over and been an unrestricted free agent and gotten $200-300 million. He came over and signed for, you know, a small contract, you know, a relatively minimum contract just so he could be here. And now, he may never get that money, so it's big for the league.
Tommy John, it's not like an ACL, and everybody has Tommy John. I had that last week. Too, so.
It's big for him. It's big for the league. Question five, justify winning the Triple Crown was the best thing you saw in sports all weekend, real or mirage?
I'm not the horse racing aficionado, but I did enjoy the race.
13th Triple Crown winner in history.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. One thing that did bother me, Baffert saying that his other horse, I don't know the name of it, was
blocking interference or whatever.
Which I'm like, well, if Justify is so great, would he really need another horse to have interference?
It's like the Tour de France.
Yeah, but other than that, that was a very exciting race. Gronk, as you mentioned, started out in the back and came all the way to second, and I enjoyed it. I didn't think I'd enjoy it that much.
Was it real or mirage?
Real. I would say real.
Yeah, and I have to say mirage because I couldn't watch it. I was running the scoreboard at Centennial Field in the Lamoille Lake Region game at that time, and I'll tell you what, that was the best thing I saw all week, watching a couple of 16-year-old kids throwing just absolutely mowing down. It was one of the best pitcher's duels you'll ever see for the state title. I think the Lake Region kid had 15 strikeouts. This isn't a seven-inning game. And neither team could hit the other pitcher. I thought it was going to go all night. Lake Region got a run. But I'm not a pitcher's duel fan, but when it's those kids at that age giving it their all, it was really cool.
There's some things about the Belmont last night or on Saturday that were just incredible. Justify defeated 9 horses in the Belmont, the largest Belmont field ever beaten by a Triple Crown winner. He defeated 35 horses in the 3 legs of the Triple Crown, more than any horse in history. That's amazing. It's still not the best thing I saw all weekend. The best thing I saw in sports all weekend was Alex Ovechkin's bender that he's been on the entire weekend. Yeah. Did you see him doing keg stands out of the Stanley Cup?
I saw him in the fountain. What fountain was that? I don't even know what that was.
Wading shirtless through a fountain somewhere in D.C. And just that was the best thing I saw.
And then he
weekend.
Would just randomly hold up the cup when he was at the Nationals game. And the crowd would go crazy.
And
he'd
that
just
first pitch,
this.
He threw 8 feet over Scherzer's head.
Then he got a second
give me
one.
Another one.
Yeah. You don't get a second one. He's the only person I know that got a second
one.
You
get one if you're Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially this weekend.
That's true.
So,
and I saw the picture of him. I'll just keep it clean. Him, his wife, and the cup in bed together. So I just...
Very nice.
You didn't see that?
No, I'm guessing...
He slept with the cup. So.
I'm guessing Ovi had a pretty good weekend.
Yeah. I don't think he'll remember.
Yeah, I don't know that he remembers most of it, but there's plenty of video out there.
Yeah, he was all over the place.
He was Gronk for a weekend.
I'm like, how's he making all these... Where is he? He's here, he's there, he's swimming, he's doing this, he's doing everything.
And unrelated, you know, another thing that I thought was the best, one of the best things I saw a weekend, I put it behind Ovechkin, was... I don't care. I know you say no one cares about men's tennis, Arnie, and it's fallen by the wayside and went out of style and with Sampras and Agassi.
Yeah.
But it always amazes me that the class exhibited at the end of tennis grand slams, the way that the loser comes out and has to speak on the podium after, I just find that amazing. No other sport asks you to do that. You know, we give, you know, LeBron punches something and breaks his hand, and people will say, oh, you know, he's a competitor, he's upset. OBJ throws something, and it's just in the heat of the moment. Richard Sherman says something, and it's in the heat of the moment. These guys come out right after losing the biggest match of their life, and 2 minutes later have to come out and congratulate the other guy. That's pretty amazing.
Now, that being said, I saw the end of a women's match just like a couple weeks ago, where the loser of the women's match, big name, I don't remember what it was, When they go over to the chair to say thank you to, to the person.
Yeah, they shake the hand of the referee.
She took her racket and smacked it against the ground until it got disintegrated. So not all of them take it like that. I mean, you know what? I don't know if you guys saw just she was just like banging it, and got all mad and smashed it.
You like the conspiracy theory on the Town Fair Tire text line about Edelman?
No, I didn't see it.
They go, it's the Russians.
Yeah.
Well. Recent Russian Olympic athletes and current World Cup team all implicated. Putin and Trump are friends. Trump and Kraft are friends. So Putin gave Edelman the drugs.
Yeah, but we at least we catch the Russians, though. They don't have that thing that it's undetectable. we catch them out there. By the way, Julian Edelman, a product of Kent State football.
That's so, right, a golden flash.
A golden flash.
Yes.
Had to get that out there.
He's a quarterback.
Yeah.
Hopefully your kid doesn't get access to HGH.
Exactly.
Wow, he's having a great year.
Wow, yeah, exactly. Though his sport's ACHA. I don't know I don't think you should be able to take that anyway. All right, what's coming up next, Brady?
We'll get into LeBron. What did you think of him breaking his hand advertising it after the fact?
All right, we'll get to that next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
I have no idea what happened to the music.
Hey, now we're Golic and Wingo.
That's mistake of the day worthy right there.
Wow, whoever wants to get to the mistake of the day, you better Town Fair Tire text line right now. First one in. 802-655-6672.
I'll be Wingo.
Yeah, I don't know what just happened there.
You're not playing hoops today?
No, I'm recovering from my complete game shutout. My back's stiff. My arm hurts.
You mean that one hitter you threw yesterday?
Complete game, one hit
it's
shutout.
It's the last Monday of hoops, and then Wednesday, obviously, the last Wednesday, and that's it for the summer. We close on down in Pomeroy Park.
You are going to be a chiseled god by the end of the week. We're both, all three of us are going to Orange Theory tomorrow. So, man.
It's going to be real tough because my back is already sore. I'm going to be lifting like one set of weights with my left arm and one set of weights with my right arm.
You sound like a bunch of 80-year-olds.
Who are you bringing the donuts tomorrow to Orange Theory?
Yeah, right. I'm bringing the dumbbells.
They said,
including you.
They go, are you ready for your workout on Tuesday? I'm like, yeah, but I can't do anything with my arms and legs.
What is it you said before the show? You could do anything from your neck up.
Neck down. Neck up.
Yeah, you can't do anything from your neck down.
Yeah,
so. But the good thing about them is they will figure out something that you can do.
They're not going to let you slide on that. So, yeah, I love that one. All right, Brady, let's talk about LeBron's hand because I can't believe he played with a broken hand for three straight games.
Yeah, so basically after the game one meltdown, the J.R. Smith play, the loss in overtime, LeBron punched a whiteboard or something in the locker room and ended up breaking his hand. Now, he played the next three games and played phenomenally to the point where people had him in the MVP conversation, but he still broke his hand in frustration after game one. So are you giving him the hero treatment because he played great despite a broken hand, or are you giving him the chump treatment because he broke his hand and look, maybe it didn't cost his team because his team wasn't winning anyways, but it's a poor look for the league's best player.
I don't believe it was broken. I think he punched the thing, and, you know, if you have like a little, maybe a chip or something, it's broken, and technically it's broken. I think he's full of baloney because after the game he was shaking hands with that arm, with that hand. I remember when I broke my hand at my wrist, I had to have a cast up to my shoulder for 6 months, and I wasn't shaking anybody's hand and then feeling good playing basketball for three more games. I don't care how tough you are and if you're LeBron James. So, and by the way, if he did break his hand and there was some big injury, shame on him for not being mentally tough enough to not do that after game number one. You're the big star. You should know better than
What's he going to do is say, I can't play anymore after game? Look, I totally get his frustration. That was the J.R. Smith, you know, mind cramp, shall we say. You know, and he came right out today and he talked about how incredibly frustrated he was because that was a game two steal, game one on the road in a place that no one else wins. But it reminds me a little of 2010. Didn't he have some mysterious elbow ailment after when he was his first go round with Cleveland? And I think the Celtics ousted him in one of the playoff series. And he started going on and on in the post game press conference about how his elbow was injured the entire series. So I don't know. I can't. Why? I guess my question is, why would he make this up?
This is why some people don't like LeBron. And this is part of the look-at-me culture of the NBA. LeBron comes out, says he played with a broken hand, and one of two things happen. Either people write off his loss and a 3-6 record in the finals now as, wow, he was injured, and people give him a pass for that. Or people look at it and say, wow, he played with a broken hand, and he still played so well. This guy's Superman.
Right.
One of those two narratives is likely to get spun, and people don't, because people look at it and say, look, if you hid that it was broken the entire series, why do you need to come out and advertise it in the post-game press conference? And that reason is for one reason only.
Sympathy.
Gain sympathy.
When somebody twists their foot, I'm not saying it's broken. It could be broken, maybe a high sprain or something like that. What's the first thing they do? If it's a seven-game series, you have like a couple days, you're coming out of the locker room. What's the first thing they do when they come out? They put that boot on, so it helps healing immediately. If you did that to your hand after game number one, he would have put it in something that would have helped the healing. I know he didn't want to tip anybody off, but you got to get the healing done.
Yeah, we don't necessarily know that. Remember Tom Brady with the Rex Burkhead where he cut his finger right before the AFC Championship game?
Yes.
Now, he walked out with the red glove on to hide that.
Yes.
But we didn't see exactly what, you know, he didn't immediately walk out of practice with it wrapped in ice or bandaged. He kept the glove on, and then he did whatever he was going to do behind closed doors. I believe LeBron was treating whatever he has, and I believe there's a real injury there. The problem is, and I think where most people draw the problem with LeBron is like, you hid this all series, and now you expect us to come out and feel sorry for you, and you want to appear like some tough guy, and it's a look at me, it's a selfish act by LeBron, and I like LeBron, and I defend him, but that was this is selfish. It was selfish for him to break it, and it's selfish for him to come out here and publicize that he played through it.
Well, did you say it's selfish of him to break? Well, okay, I understand what you're saying because of the fact that he chose to punch something.
Right.
Okay, I was thinking, but I mean, it's funny. I'm looking at all these up close pictures. Leave it to you know the social media to have these ultra up close pictures.
Where he's shaking hands after the game,
right?
Or something
but there, there's definitely some swelling in the hand in game two that wasn't there in game one as to whether it was broken. I mean,
he
how
plays
many
basketball?
Ways?
There's swelling all over his body.
But can't you? I mean, at this point, after 105 games or whatever he played, there's probably not an inch of him that wasn't hurting. But,
exactly.
But the thing was, you're right. The reason I have a problem with this is because, really, I mean, why does he have to make this about him? Do they really think that if LeBron James hadn't somehow hurt his hand, they were going to come back and win that series?
No, they weren't going to win anything. First time texter, LeBron just wants to act like a macho goat, which he is great in today's ball, but not above it all. Did I read that right?
No, it's not great overall. It's great in today's game, but it's not great overall.
Derek in Middlebury asked me a very personal question. Arnie, how much do you bench?
You're always on the bench.
Brady, do you, I don't know how much I bench.
You probably bench press less than 70 pounds.
I was going to say 50 pounds, I'm going to guess.
We'll find out tomorrow.
Well,
I'll be watching.
The bar at most gyms is 45 pounds.
Ooh. So you mean I got to put the bar up with no weight on it?
Yeah.
I think I could do that.
I think you could do that.
Yeah, I think you put 10 pounds on each side, so that's 20 and 45. I think I could do 65, 70.
Okay, that's what I put you at, 70 pounds. Okay.
I'll tell you, somebody's got to bring a camera tomorrow to Orange Theory.
There's no weights there.
Two old guys who can barely get out of their chair.
I love that.
He wants to know if you bench more than me. That answer is no.
Yeah, what do you bench, 75?
He throws 75.
He didn't like that. All right, I got a great last story standing. Terrell Owens said, hey, anybody want some powdered cocaine donuts? We'll get to that story when we get back right here on 101.3 ESPN. When we had that little mishap, mistake of the day brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniform in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Great Twitter feud between Terrell Owens, and Jason Whitlock. You know, talking about the whole Hall of Fame situation, how T.O. is not going to be at the induction ceremony. T.O. tweeted out to Whitlock because they were going back and forth. Here's some of the tweets T.O. wrote. How about you and me go celebrate over a box of Krispy Kreme donuts and a glass of low-fat milk? Make that almond milk for me. I'm kind of lactose intolerant. And then he goes on, okay, I'll meet you at the ceremony. This is T.O. talking to Jason Whitlock. But after you lose 100 pounds by August 4th, then I'll attend. But you can't do liposuction. Oh, and I only want two donuts. You can have the rest. Bring your boy Michael Irvin, too. I've got some powdered donuts for him. You two, Uncle Tom's. Why you all mad? I'm not. And it goes on and on.
That's mature.
It was back and forth. It was going back and forth about his weight. Gosh, he's so mad.
I know. Is he 11?
He's really angry. He needs to speak to somebody about this, Brady, because I think he's going to look. No, I'm serious. I think he's going to look back maybe 20 years from now and say, I made some major mistakes. I should have gone to the ceremony.
Well, you know? I think this is who T.O. is, okay? And I think T.O. is going to look back and not have any regrets. And if that's who T.O. wants to be and he's happy with that, then it is his choice. We can disagree all we want, but
what to be a horse's.
But you think at some point, I mean, maybe he'd look in the mirror and go, maybe I have been a little tricky.
Some people never get it. Some people think that everyone else is out to get them. Some people blame everybody else. That's just who some people are.
I heard him on Colin's show. He's so adversarial. I mean, he's so argumentative.
Yeah.
Even when Colin said, well, you can't come back in the NFL. You're 40. You can't tell me what I can't do.
He said he's going to run a 4.340.
Yeah. I heard that. Come on. But whatever. Look, I don't care. If he thinks he could run a 4.340, fine. Good luck to you. You think you can play in the NFL? Good luck to you.
He doesn't seem like a guy who's going to grow old and frail gracefully.
Yeah, no. That's for damn sure. All right. Who do we got to thank? Intern who?
We got to thank intern Lance, intern Lewis, and intern Colton.
Wow. I don't know what they've done all day.
I wonder
seen
the
them.
Show
yeah.
was so perfect.
I don't understand that. Brady, what's coming up at Champaign Valley Game Night?
Well, we're going to talk to you about another great thing out of New York Giants camp.
All right. For Brady and for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champaign Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.